Welcome everyone to my new podcast, Growing Money with Sean Trace. Now, who are you and what do you do, man?
So that's a good question. I am James Lowry. Right. And what do I do? So I guess the question is, what do I do for money? What do I do for fun? What's the question?
Here's the interesting question, because can you tell everyone what your Instagram handle is there? What is your Instagram name?
So it's Rethink the Rat Race.
Which is an awesome concept, because so often, one of the things that when I ask people, who are you and what do? They'd say a job. And we so often define ourselves by that job, which is, I think, in essence, a big part of the rat race. Now, how have you kind of taken yourself out of that equation? Talk to me about that.
So primarily through real estate investing, I will say, but the foundations for that were laid through frugality and just trying to earn more and spending less than we earn. And so that gave us the income that we needed to be able to buy real estate and then use that as a passive or more passive source of income than a 9-to-5 job. And so we essentially are real estate investors.
That's awesome. And how did that journey come about for you? How did you get there?
So I did not grow up very well to do at all, actually. My family's pretty poor even still. And so, I did not have the same mindset that I have now, but I will preface this by saying that both my parents are deaf. And so when I was growing up, I was hearing like people like just in like passing conversations, not very often, you know, like you would hear someone talk about like an IRA or a 401k. And I thought that everybody else was having these conversations and that I wasn't because my parents were deaf. And so I thought that the onus was on me to do the research to find out what this stuff was because everybody else's parents were telling them. Even though that wasn't necessarily the case, that's what I thought at the time. Now I realize nobody's talking about it ever.
Nobody's.
But yeah. Me into the spot of it. And then finding out about financial independence, I was at work, you know, working not a dead end job, but, you know, it wasn't a dream job by any means. Yeah. And someone there had mentioned that had they found this specific website, they would have been retired by now. And this was a lady in her 40s who was there with her daughter going to a physical therapy clinic. And so that really like opened my eyes.
This is something that, and I want to preface this. Like there was, I'm doing my executive MBA right now online from a school that is budget friendly, which is awesome. And, you know, I reached out and I applied for a scholarship and I got it. Not a full ride, but it's within reason. It's nothing that's breaking my bank. And the reason I did it was because I grew up with absolutely no financial education at all. And, you know, it was, and I bless my parents' hearts. They are good people, like, you know, really good people, but neither of them got money. You know, when my mom would go to balance the checkbook, she would constantly be stressed. And I think that it was because they both were working for institutions that they believed in that were good institutions, but didn't pay people well. And it was simply, there was just enough to cover the three kids and expenses in school and clothes. And I think it was something that it was so stressful for my parents. They didn't talk about it. And they didn't, I don't think they had the information to start with as well. And, you know, to be fair, at that time, you had to go to the library. You had to go to a class. You had to go to places. And I mean, you know, you might find, you know, back in the day, there was probably like Think and Grow Rich, but there were, I don't know what the resources were for people to educate themselves. But now that's not even an excuse anymore. We don't grow up with it, but the information's out there and it's becoming more widespread, you know, and I'm loving it. And this is one of the things I have to preface on this podcast. I am not a financial expert and I am doing this podcast to explore and to learn from people that have stories to tell, that have information. So how did you go about finding this path? You know, you said that this information wasn't always there. What was it that kicked this off?
Well, again, so like I'd mentioned, you know, I thought like I heard, you know, a 401k and I was like, I have no clue what that is. Yeah. And at the time, I still think that like at that time I was thinking, oh, like my friend's parents know what these are. And I didn't want to seem dumb by asking what it was. Right. And so I didn't bring it up. And so later, at least during my time, at least it was, I could look it up on the internet and see what it was. And so even way before I had any money to invest, I knew like what the limits were on a 401k, you know, and that was just from a simple Google search. It definitely wasn't like that did not necessarily put any, I don't know, inspiration in me to start investing. Cause I was like living hand to mouth. Every dollar that came in, I spent, I was the worst. Like if, you know, the marshmallow, experiment that they did with kids to see whether or not they could do delayed gratification, I would have lost at that 100%. Like I have no doubt. And so, but I do want to say that by saying like, I was bad with money and that was kind of like, to me, my identity, right? Because I have a twin sister and she was good with money. And so we used to call her the Bank of Anna. And so if we ever needed money, we would go and borrow money from her. And then she would, you know, like we would have to pay her back. But you can get better at money. You don't have to be good at money. My identity doesn't have to be that I'm bad at this. And so through research, finding out about it, like, again, I found out about this website and the website name just stuck out so much to me that I was like, okay, this has got to be like the craziest thing. And so it's called MrMoneyMustache.com. And so that's it was awesome very name. Easy for me to that remember awesome the name, name of it. Exactly. And so to me, I was like, what is this going to be? Well, then I looked at it and it's this guy who's like got a very brash mentality about how you should be spending your money and how if you're doing X, Y, Z, then you're wasting it and you need to be slapped in the face and all this stuff. And it was like, I needed that because I kind of have a chip on my shoulder. And so that mentality really resonated with me, even though it doesn't resonate with everyone. So that kind of opened the doors to financial literacy for me.
I love that. And I love the word financial literacy. I love that concept. I love the idea of that because earlier today, someone was saying something and they were kind of espousing this idea of ignorance is bliss. And I was like, granted, ignorance might be bliss because you don't understand that you're, I don't know, be careful doing it wrong. You know what I mean? And like that there, or that there could be a better way. One of the things that I like to talk about when I make my reels and kind of try to make inspirational content is that when we butt up against an obstacle of some sort, when we kind of run headlong into some challenge, people will often back down or have a trouble pushing through it. They don't realize is what's on the other side is their own potential. Like the person who says I'm bad with money. Well, what if you actually really put your time into changing your conceptions about money, conceptions about how you interact with money, conceptions about how you interact with not just money, but wealth and abundance. And on the other side of that is the abundant version of you. You know, it's like the, Loki, you know, we got all these different versions of you. And there's another, someplace, some point in time, this reality, there's a version of you that's good with money. You simply have to get the information to get there. And that might be as simple as retraining, finding a new job. There's a guy, I'm looking at this one story about this one guy that's really interesting. And it's this guy, I was watching him on a tutorial online because I'm studying some code on the side. And he's got this great YouTube channel about how he was working as a construction worker, you know, working these long hours because he got a history degree. And I was like, that's what I got in university. And my university was like, yes, you can do lots of fun things with it. And I was like, I haven't been able to do a thing with that thing. But this guy went back and he became, you know, earning six figures easy. And it was interesting because that was his way of doing it. But yet what was happening is that man didn't change. He's the same guy, but his perceptions changed. His belief in himself changed. And suddenly he's now making more money because there was a shift that happened here. More than certainly he went and trained, he learned new skills, but there was a shift that happened here. And to me, that like financial literacy, that's what it's all about. It's that information, it's that knowledge.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And it can be learned.
It totally. And I think that people need to realize that. So how would you, if you were to give people advice, where would you recommend people start to go learn this stuff?
That's a good question. So I do like Mr. Money Mustache. And that's like just such an easy website. And the thing is, to me, it's like, it broke it down as an average consumer who did not know anything about anything. Right. And then I read, there's a specific article that says it's called The Shockingly Simple Math Behind Early Retirement. And so it just breaks down the math, and that's all it really is for early retirement, not necessarily for being good at money, but mostly that's also math too. But it's also a lot of psychology, sociology, like, are you, you know, willing to turn down this or that, or to buck the norm of, you know, you don't have to drive the newest car that you can afford or buy the biggest house that you can afford. And so some of that's like social pressures, but the other side of it is that leads to the number side of it. And if you can see that that number is trending upward, then you're doing well. It might not be optimized. You might not, you know, have picked the absolute perfect investment, but that's okay, because if it's still growing, you're still doing better.
I love that. I think that the whole keeping up with the Joneses is one of the things that is so dangerous. And I think it's one of the things that really, really runs a lot of people into the ground financially. You know, this idea of needing to have the newest thing. I remember years ago, I was living here in Vietnam, and my friends were working as DJs at this nightclub in town. And I would go and hang out over there. And there was this one couple that was this high roller couple. Every night they came in and they spent a lot of money, and they drove the newest bike. Everything was flashy with this couple, the nicest clothes. And then one day I was out with my friend that was the DJ there, and we pulled up to this cafe, and there was this tiny, 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 tiny house. I can't even describe it as a house. It was like a room, and the whole side opened up, and I saw this couple that were living out of almost like a space that had been the size of, like, I don't know. It was this tiny space, almost like a closet. And they had their clothes in there. They had a half, like this skinny bed and their motorbike. And what I suddenly realized, it was all a facade. It was all this charade, you know, it was all this fake dance. And yet they were doing this to kind of, I don't know what their point was. I'm not judging them, but it was a real snapshot for me that not everything is always what it seems. And you know, you can see people who, some people are like, you know, doing the dance of money, but yet they don't have sound foundations financially. You know, like, maybe the expensive clothes, maybe the spending a couple hundred bucks every night just on drinks is not a smart financial move. You know, maybe they should look at something else.
Yeah, exactly. And to me, it's like, it's okay if that's what you want to do, right? But I think that it has to be an intentional choice, right? And so it's like, I know people that, like, they say that, you know, they say, oh, well, it's just like, it's just a weekend out. And then it's like, oh, okay, well, it was also a weekend out last week. And it was also concert tickets. And it was also you drive the new car. And then it's also, you know, and then it's like, they don't have money to do things that we do, you know, and then they're like, oh, that's the worst part, actually. It's like, they make all the little decisions that they're not being necessarily conscious about. Like, it's just like, they're just flowing through life, you know, kind of letting these decisions be made for them. And then we say, oh, you know, we're going to Europe for a month and a half. Do y'all want to come and meet up with us somewhere? And they're like, oh, that must be nice. And it's like, you have all the same options for these things. And we're not judging you for doing whatever you're doing, right? Yes. But it is an intentional choice. If you're making a choice, like, the choice is being made. We just hope that you're thinking about it the same way that we're thinking about it, and that what we're spending money on is important to us. And if you look back and say, oh, I wish I hadn't gone out, well, then that's not really important to you.
Yep. Yep. There was, I've been reading the book, I Can Teach You to Be Rich by Ramit Sethi. But there was one part of that book where he talked about that. Like, it was just about, one of the things that he was emphasizing was choices. It's there's this whole thing of choices. And that was one of the things that was really resonating with me, is he's like, I chose to make decisions that other people weren't making. And, you know, and one of the things too is I love the idea of, and this is something that comes into my other podcast a lot. My main podcast that's more like just about, you know, inspirational choices and such. But do you want in your life to be reactive or do you want to be proactive? Because so many of us, we walk through life reacting to the world around us. And the reality is that we could be co-creating the world around us. You can be creating the life you want, but there is often a trade-off. And one of the things that that he said in that book was spend on the things that are important to you, but you know, things that are not important to you, cut mercilessly, cut back, you know, if something, and that's another thing that, you ever read Timothy Ferris's 4-Hour Work Week?
I have. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love his point of like, what is non-essential? You got to figure that out, you know? So you make a list of 10 things to do for your, you know, to-do list today. There are two of them that are probably important. You know, the 80-20 principle, there's probably two things on there that are going to earn you the most money and are actually important, you know, and it's up to us to figure out what that is.
Yeah, I agree. That's it 100%. It's the choices that you make are determine who you are, how you spend your money, what you're doing with your money, how you spend your time. And so all of those things make you who you are.
I love that. As you started going down this path, what drew you toward real estate? Was it the website? Friends or people that were around you? What pulled you in that direction?
So that is a good question. Actually, I'm glad that you brought up Tim Ferriss because a few years before I had found out about the financial literacy and all that stuff, I was a manager at a gym. And so I had read The 4-Hour Body, which is Tim Ferriss's lesser known work. He has a book about life hacks, about body hacks. He's like biohacking essentially. And so from that, I thought, oh, that was a really interesting like perspective on how he's trying to hack all of these different systems. Let me see what else he has. And then he had the 4-Hour Work Week. And so I had read that. But at the time, I'm a manager at a gym making $12 an hour. And he's talking about like, you can make a blog. And I'm like, I don't think anybody wants to hear what I have to say. You can make an ebook. I'm like, I don't even want to write. And one of the things he mentions for passive income is real estate. And so I kind of got into it then, at least researching it. No one in my family does real estate. Like, we don't have any realtors. Like, no one has a clue what we're doing, really. And so I started looking at a website called Bigger Pockets, and it's like probably the biggest online resource for real estate investors. Just like article after article, like tons of information. They have like forums where you can ask all these questions and all this stuff. But then I let the limiting beliefs like get to me essentially. Like, I make $12 an hour. I live at home with my mom. Like, I was still at the time going to school. And so I was like, you know what? Like, this is going to be something for me in the future, but it's not going to be for me now. And so I just kind of put it off. And then whenever I found out about, you know, financial independence and the fact that I could like change my life and, you know, not have to work a 9-to-5 until I'm 65, then I was already kind of predispositioned toward real estate because I had already done some of the research earlier. And another part of it is real estate is without a doubt the fastest way to reach financial independence and get to the point where you can quit your job. Like, that to us is like the biggest thing. It's the leverage where you can buy a house with money from the bank and only put 20% down. You can't do that with stocks. You can't do that with your 401k. You can't borrow. I mean, you can, but it's very risky. But I mean, even realistically, you can't go to the bank and say, hey, I'm going to buy $1 million worth of stocks. Can you give me $800,000 worth of money to do this with? They won't do that, you know?
No way. Well, and it's interesting because real estate is, you know, it is one as old as time. It's one of the, you know, owning property and being able to, there was a guy that I knew in school too. This guy, what was his name? I can't remember his name, but he was kind of a washout. He hung around the college campus, but he didn't do that much. He had been a student there and kind of washed out, but he still hung around and he was a really nice guy. But people would start to notice him driving different cars. And he started out with this one car And then he got a nicer car. I was like, oh, wow, that's a nicer car. And then he came with a nicer car. And what he was doing was he was buying cars that were beat up, flipping them, cleaning them up, and selling them for profit. And he was just starting with cars. And he started buying more cars. And then he started buying property. And he started buying more property. And one of the things that struck me is that probably one of the most successful people that I know from my college. And everyone at my college thought this guy was a washout, thought this guy was not smart, thought this guy had no skills. It was just that the skills that he had were not being taught. Yet his dad was from, I can't remember, I think he was Serbian. And he was a really cool guy. And his dad was just this old school hustler. Like, dad understood money, understood bargaining, understood flipping things, because he came, his dad was really, you know, from a family that worked hard, did not have anything handed to them. And they, what they got, they made work. My father-in-law downstairs, we live in this big house, and my father-in-law is big on vintage, like scooters and bicycles. And he'll go out and find a bike that has been just destroyed, trashed, beat down, bring it back. And with his own hands, he scrubs everything off, and he takes a bike that is someone's throwaway and turns it into a gem, and then sells it and gets a nicer bike. And what is it in the real estate? Was it the Burr? Yeah. I don't know how, you know, the idea, but, you know, or we just go back to the flipping houses, you know, the idea of it is a place that if you are willing to learn and to put in some work too, at the same time, you know, whether that be scouting, Robert Kiyosaki always talks about that in Rich Dad Poor Dad. He would walk neighborhoods. You know, that was his way of doing it. And you certainly don't have to now, but that was what he would do to look at the market. Now, what part of this do you enjoy the most? What part of getting into real estate is really fun for you?
So the purchasing and all that kind of stuff is always like the sexy part of it. And like your exit strategy is always the sexy part. I actually like the management, just the day-to-day management of it is so much fun for me. Like tweaking all these little systems and seeing like, how does this affect this? And how can I essentially eliminate myself from the entire process so that I'm not necessarily the go-to. Exactly. And so that to me is like, that's the most fun part. And that's probably the part that my wife likes the least. And so it works out very well because she has no interest in doing the day-to-day stuff, but I do. And so that's what I do.
That's awesome. Now, you guys, you do this together. You and your wife do this together. Is it, was this something that you guys embarked on this journey together? Did one of you kind of go down this path sooner than the other? How did that work for you? How did you get your partner on board with a, you know, with this new direction financially?
That's a really good question. So we were married when we found out about like financial independence and about investing. And really I found out about it. And then I was like, hey, we're doing this thing. And I was like, we're not going out to eat anymore. We're not going shopping anymore. Like, we're going to change our lives overnight, you know? And it went over very poorly. And so I had to reframe the way that I posed the opportunities. And one thing that we've been always very intentional about is time spent together. And so, you know, we would go on our daily walks and we would just talk, and it's like just us two talking. Like, we don't have our phones. We're not messing around with anything. And so, I started living more by example because I really wanted to take this seriously, and I wanted to like do this because I thought that it would help us out tremendously. And so I bought a bike and started biking to work. We had two cars at the time, and I'm choosing to bike to work. So that was a big part of it. Like, just the little decisions that like didn't really move the needle, but it's something very visual. Like, okay, he's packing his bike and he's getting his helmet and he's going to ride a bike to work. And so it was stuff like that. And then really the game changer was me posing, because my wife didn't really enjoy her job. And I said, you know, listen, if we do what I'm suggesting doing, and if we are both on board, and if we do it right, then we could quit our jobs in 5 years. and it ended up taking three. So
what was the word? You've used a word a couple times that I really want to tap into and ask you about: financial freedom, or was it freedom? How'd you say that? Financial
independence, financial freedom. Both of them are pretty much the same thing. Yeah.
Talk to me about financial independence, because that's something that I haven't heard talked about as much. I'm guessing that I think I know what it is, but talk to me about that. What is financial independence?
Yeah, conceptually, financial independence is essentially saying, like, you have enough passive income or income from sources that eliminate the need for you to work another day in your life. And so that is like traditional financial independence. Now they have like, it has been, I'm not going to say hijacked, but there are all these little caveats now to it. Like there's barista financial independence, which is to say that I can cover most of my expenses and all I have to do is work a minimum wage job, or doing something that I enjoy for fun to reach like whatever monetary goals I need. And then there's coast financial independence, which is to say that I have front loaded my investments enough that if I don't contribute another dollar, I can retire traditionally and I can spend all the money I want now and not have to worry about my retirement. And so there are all these different like flavors, I guess, of financial independence. But the typical traditional financial independence is to say that you've reached a point where you don't have to work for money to meet any of your spending.
Let's imagine that I want to reach financial independence. Can you tell me five things that you would recommend that I embark on, or a couple of things? Five is an arbitrary number. What are some things that you would recommend that I do?
So lowering your spending is the biggest one, right? How you do that is probably the bigger question. But most people, they're spending on the big three categories. So their housing, their transportation, and their food. Those are the three biggest ones for most people. And so to me, like you hear a lot about like people are like, oh, I cut out coffee. Like a $2 or $3 coffee a day does not move the needle as much as moving from a $2,000 a month apartment to a $1,000 a month apartment. Yeah. You know, like you can't cut that much coffee, right? So, yeah. So that to me is a big part of it. But I will say that what we did was we looked at every single thing we were spending on and we tried to optimize that, from our phone bill to our internet to our car insurance. Like every single thing we spent money on, we looked at and made like a conscious decision on, okay, is that something we're going to keep the same, or is that something that we can try to find another alternative for? So some of the easy, like low hanging fruit are subscription services. Right. Like a lot of people have way more subscriptions than they think they do. And so it's just that little like death by a thousand cuts. And so that's one thing. Lowering your cell phone bill. Like if you can go to an alternative company and save, you know, $50 a month, that's going to add up eventually. But I think that the big three are the big thing. Right. So think about what you're spending on food and how you're spending it, right? Are you going out to eat two or three times a week, and can that be limited? And so one thing that my wife and I like to do now, if we want to go out to eat, and we still go out to eat pretty often, I would say, but one way that we do it now is we'll both get a salad and then we'll split an entree, and like we'll get like a full size salad and then split an entree. And so we can go out to eat almost as much as we want, and it doesn't really move the needle, especially with all the traveling we do. It doesn't necessarily make sense to go out and buy groceries for a one night thing. So those are some of the tips that I can give toward that. Another thing you're going to want to do to reach financial independence, that's just for the frugality side of it, right? Another thing you're going to want to do is decide on an investment strategy. Are you going to focus on index funds, which is what I would suggest if you're going into like 401k, IRA, stock markets? Picking an index fund is something that tracks the market, as opposed to picking an Apple and then a Tesla and then a SpaceX or a Boeing or whatever it may be, because you don't know what's going to happen with those companies. And if you have a crystal ball and you know which one's going to blow up in the next 2 or 3 years, like that'll be great, but you also don't know which one's going to plummet. And so by picking an index fund, it just makes the whole process much simpler, and you can bank on an average of a 7% return rate year over year. And so the idea is that is going to grow to the point where if you limit your spending, the more you lower your spending, the less you need in investments. And the more you lower your spending, the more you have to invest. So it's actually like a double-edged sword.
Exactly. And I think that one of the things that, you know, I've always enjoyed, I like Dave Ramsey's like 7 steps. I've always liked his stuff. And whether you like David Ramsey or not, I mean, one of the things that I really find is interesting is like people don't realize, first of all, that they, first of all, so many people don't realize that they have a problem. You know, and that's one of the things that I think is a big deal. And that's, you know, if you're not focusing on the fact that you might be, and the death by a thousand cuts is something that I absolutely love, that analogy, because people, it's just like, what is it, that a scythe, you know, the thing that that you scoop and you'll pour the pasta into and the water runs straight through it, but it catches the pasta. I feel like so often that is a lot of people's financial, you know, they're going scooping into the river and then they pick up their paycheck and everything has already flowed out. And I think that that so often is how a lot of people interact with money. And I don't know why. I think that there's some psychology to it. I think it's intimidating to kind of go and look at these bills. It's intimidating to go and look at these things at times, but I think that it's very rewarding if you do, and you can start empowering yourself. And again, I come back to, I'm really enjoying learning coding right now. I really am having fun with it. Part of a reason is it was something I never thought that I could do because it was intimidating to me. It was scary to me. And I think that financial literacy for many people is the same thing. They've become conditioned to dreading looking at their bank account. And that's just a knee-jerk reaction to the way things were. But you, again, have the power to make changes. And that's what I love hearing, why I want to talk to people on this and this podcast. And this podcast is going to be kind of a mix. It's all things financial, money and investing, entrepreneurship. I want to talk to CEOs. How did you guys approach money? How do the average businessman approach money? How do people that are investing in real estate approach money? Because I do believe that there are some underlying principles that these people have in common, whether it be, you know, Robert Kiyosaki talks about just this mindset shift of how people engage with money. And that's an important first step, is to look at how you look at money. And I mean, that's the whole point of that book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. They both made money. It was a difference in perspective these two people had. Now, if you could go back in time and talk to your younger self and give yourself some financial advice, what financial advice would you give yourself?
It would be to not care what other people think, like what your perception of other people think of you. Because that was like most of my spending was to try to show that I wasn't poor, right? But I grew up poor, and then it was just like overcompensating for it. And so, you know, I drove a really nice car and I paid a 23% interest rate for the loan of that car. And so it's like, oh, things like that. Yeah, exactly. And so I always had the nicest phone. I always had, but my card literally got declined at a Redbox, which is like, you know, a movie rental thing that cost $1.07. And my card got declined. I didn't have $1.07. So to me, my advice to my younger self would be like, one, don't care what other people think, because they're not thinking about you nearly as much as you think they are, right? Like, yep. I thought like, oh man, everybody's going to be talking about me pulling up in my cool car. They don't give a shit what I'm driving. No one cares.
No, they don't. And I think that's, what was it? My wife will put me in check quite often when I'll be like, what's going on? There's something, or she's having a bad day. And I'm like, what did I do? What did I do today? And she looks at me square in the eyes and says, not everything's about you. You know, and there are moments where we do think that the world revolves around us and that people are paying attention to us, but they're often paying attention to themselves and stuck in their own things and trying to, you know, make themselves feel better. And we all get into this circle of consumption. And I mean, I see it trained into us from early, you know, ages. And this is one of the things that I'm trying to teach my daughter. My daughter, I have teaching her, I have her own YouTube channel. And in the beginning, it was something that I was just trying to build for her because I saw all these kids were doing it. I was like, wow, that's interesting. You know, they're making a lot of money. And I was like, well, if we can help her make some money. But early on, I became very disenchanted with all these kids' YouTube channels because it was consumption, 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 consumption. This is our newest toy. This is our newest thing. Watch this toy. Watch this toy. And I don't have any problem with toys. But the unnecessary massive amounts of consumption of toys is not necessarily something that I think of as healthy. And so we shifted up the whole focus of our YouTube channel is just at teaching people words, teaching, educating people, and it's educational. And so our channel quickly shifted away from, I don't think we did like one or two toys. Like, this is our first toy. But we really quickly shifted to education. Why? Because for me, I wanted to create a space where, you know, I could educate kids about money eventually. And I love that as we're building this educational channel right now, we're teaching English and you know, we're diving into some STEM and other things. But eventually I want to teach financial literacy to kids because why not? It's interesting. It's awesome, right? A kids channel that teaches kids about growing money. That's stuff we need. You know, I mean, the most like financial education a lot of kids get is Monopoly, and that just turns into a blood fest.
Exactly. Exactly. You're not wrong. Actually, I've never even considered like what do we currently have for kids? And I've always thought nothing, but Monopoly is the closest thing.
Yeah. And Monopoly is, I mean, fun game, but I don't think that's accurate. So like, I mean, that's like 1900s, you know, like, you know, absolutely chaotic type of way it worked. I think that I would love to, what was it? I believe Robert Kiyosaki has a game thing. I think it's called Cash Flow. I've never played it, but he talks about it in his books. He's got this game called Cash Flow, and like they teach people to just, it's like a game that watches where your money's going. And that in and of itself is revolutionary for some people to just see what am I spending money on? And is it in any way important?
Yeah, that would be a great thing to see. I've not played the game myself, so I can't speak to it, but I would be interested to see, you know, how does that translate, or if people are just like averagely spending all their things on the game, but or if like the strategy of the game to win is to have the most money. And so does that actually translate outside of the game? Like, do people change the way that they spend their money based on, you know, a board game that they've won? Who knows?
Well, he did. I mean, obviously he's going to talk, you know, about his game in a positive light because right. It's his game. Yeah. But he had said that there were people that came up to him that said, you know, this was really mind opening for me because I never thought that I would be able to see money in a different way or to look at myself interacting with money in a different way. So I think that, and I'm a huge fan of gamifying life. Can you make a process fun? You know, can you set goals that you can, you know, aim to hit and to achieve? Because maybe then this whole process of cutting back becomes more fun. Because I think that's one of the other things that people forget about and forget about with everything. It's dopamine. Like, it's all about that good vibe that comes from buying that thing. And I think so many of us, especially in the age of social media and scrolling and just like, we're looking for that next fix, you know? And I think that, coming back to the simple joys in life, you know, like, you were talking about how you enjoy going for walks with your wife, and that's free. It's a beautiful, fun thing that you can do with your significant other that doesn't cost any money, you know? And there are things out there that we can find joy in that don't have to cost us a ton of cash.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have to go and spend money on a jet ski to go out on the weekends to then have fun. Like, it is fun, don't get me wrong, but that's not necessarily what I think is a priority for me and right. And us. And we can go on a walk. And that's something that like the best part about that is like, we go to the gym, we do all these things, and those kind of translate across wherever we're traveling, but we can always go on a walk. You know, the weather might not be perfect, but we can always, it doesn't matter where we are in the world, wherever we're at, we can always go on a walk together in the morning, in the evening, sometimes both, sometimes neither, you know?
I love that. We recently, we went out to do a video blog with my family, and we went to play this, didn't play. It was, we went out to a fishing village, and the whole activity was they taught us how to fish in the traditional manner, in the traditional nets. And, you know, I see it with people that will go and buy food, and that's money that just flows out. And, you know, and then we consume without thinking about where that came from. And when my daughter had to trudge through the water to fish, it woke her up to the reality that, this is not easy. And she was, you know, she worked hard for that fish that she got to eat. And it was something that was a fun experience, but it taught her about consumption and just, you know, what's that proverb? Give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish, you feed him for his lifetime, you know? So I think that teaching people how to do this is the gift of a lifetime. It's a gift of freedom.
Yeah, it can be for sure. And so some people will take that now and, you know, run with it and say, oh, okay, well, I can teach a man to fish, or I can sell a course on teaching a man to fish, or I can,
exactly.
I need to hire him to be a fisherman once I've taught him to fish. And now I can create a charter company where I am going to, you know, sell people on going fishing. And so like I have a friend of mine who is constantly talking to me about business, and I love business, right? I love optimizing. I love doing all these things, right? But then he tries to turn it around and say like, oh, you should be doing this. And it's like, I'm happy with what I'm doing. Like, why would I add more? I mean, not necessarily effort. I'm okay with effort, right? But what's the end goal? Is the end goal more money? Yeah. Because I don't necessarily need more money, right? I'm happy with what I'm doing. Now, if it's a passion project, if it's something that I would enjoy doing, then that's something else completely separate. You know, I can get joy from it. But to create a business for just the pure concept of I can make more money and I have the skills to do it, but I don't necessarily want to do it or want the money, then what's the point?
Yeah. And I think that that's so important. What is important to you? Figuring out what is really important to you and then charting that course and seeing how you can get there and what's going to take you in the direction you want to go. Because you're right. There's no two people that are the same. There's no two stories that are the same. There's no two journeys that are the same. But if you can find out what works for you and what will truly bring you joy, then that's your first step, you know, down the path that is towards your greater, your highest potential, I would say. What last advice would you like to give everyone before we sign off? What last thing would you like to share with people?
What I would tell people is that you don't have to have other people believe in you to do these things, right? Like having someone believe in you is definitely important and great, but you don't have to have that. I did not have anyone necessarily believing in us whenever, I mean, at least my wife believed in me, but even at first she didn't. She was like, this is the craziest thing I've ever heard. So to me, like, there are so many people that are like, you know, I don't have the support system. I don't have this. I don't have that. Like, you can believe in yourself and that can be enough. And all you have to do is have the gumption to go and do whatever it is that you need to be done. And then people will believe in you afterwards, right? They'll say, hey, I doubted you and you actually, you know, overcame all of these things, right? And if you truly believe in what you're doing, that is good enough.